now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Steffi Barnett. On today's show, Ez talks to singer-songwriter Amity. He's been called a rising phoenix and one to watch.
Plus an early look at the latest LGBT plus books with the lovely Terry.
All today.
Right here on Shout Out. Oh, this is weird being upstairs, isn't it?
It is.
I don't know if I like this or not.
It's
really bright. We're normally used to hiding away in the
It is very bright. Very nice, though. Nice and airy.
Yeah.
Although I've just had to close all the windows.
Steffi, you're looking very summery.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, you're a very colourful jumper. Not really good radio, but you have got a very nice colourful jumper.
I'll hold it up to the microphone so people can...
tell that it's Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
Created by an artist and an Italian designer.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a gual.
Looking snazzy.
Are you off to Italy again this year? Are you thinking of it? You really like Italy.
Not sure yet. We're waiting to see what happens in the Straits of Hormuz.
Yeah, but that shouldn't affect Italy, surely. Although it affected the prices.
It's the petrol.
It's diesel.
It's
the diesel that's going to cripple us.
Yeah, we're not sure. We are going away to Edinburgh for Halloween and are staying in a haunted castle.
Oh.
So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, we're in the tower. They put us in the top of the tower.
Yeah. I
it's
hope
weird
they know
about Halloween already, isn't
it? Oh, I know. I hope they know what a wuss I am, because I'm going to have a head torch. I'm going to have a handheld torch.
I think you should take a recorder with you and see if you can interview a gay ghost.
A gay ghost.
A gay ghost.
Okay. A gay ghost.
All right then. I'm up for a challenge always.
Yeah. So I ought to bring it up actually. Me and Tara are off to see a new film called Mad Fabulous.
Ooh.
Which is coming out in June. It's part of the Irish Film Festival. And we're off to see the premiere of it this week. You've seen Bridgerton, haven't you? You know how like prim and proper they all are, and all the talk of the ton and like, well, imagine it's that kind of era, and a new Viscount comes in who's flamboyantly gay. Like seriously flamboyantly gay.
Well, like,
and wants to have a party where you all cross dress and things like that. Imagine what the talk of the ton would be like.
Wow.
And that's kind of the basis of the film. And it's actually based on a real life story.
That sounds brilliant. Right.
Is that where you get your fashions from?
Oh yes, definitely. Can't you tell? You
know? Well, yeah. I'll hold you up to the microphone.
When are you seeing that, Andy?
Right now.
Right now?
Literally right now.
Oh,
right. While you're listening to this, we'll be there.
Oh, I see.
We can be in two places at the same time on this station.
Magic. Yeah,
we have that ability.
It's because we're LGBTQI plus. Magical beings we are.
So now they're talking of being LGBTQIA plus, being two places at one time.
Yes.
Would you like to introduce our next guest?
Yes, I would. So this interview is with Amity Miller, a fantastically unique singer and songwriter, some really powerful songs. Their interview was absolutely amazing. It's always lovely speaking to creative young people who have got a lot to say.
They're always really passionate. Cool. Have a listen to this.
On today's interview, we have the absolute pleasure of being joined by Amity Miller, who is going to be talking to us about what seems to have been an incredible few years. So, hello, Amity.
Hi, how are you?
Hello. It's amazing to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, should we just dive straight into it? Can you tell the listeners a little bit about you, about what these last few years have been like, and about how you got into doing what it is that you do?
I'm a singer-songwriter, and I've been writing music since I was 9 years old. I still remember the first time I wrote a song. It was on the back of a napkin in a restaurant in crayon, and I got bored because the grown-ups were talking about boring grown-up things, probably taxes or something like that. I don't know. I don't know what grown-ups talk about. But basically, I just got bored, wrote a song, and sang it immediately because the tune was just there along with the words. And my family looked at me like I was crazy. It was awesome.
Wow, 9 years old is very young, and you remember it so clearly. Do you remember what the song was and what it was about?
I think it was about a friendship that was going wrong at school. Because my friend was being quite mean to me. And I didn't want to lose their friendship because I cared about them a lot, but I didn't really know what to do in that situation. But I mean, I was nine. Not many 9 year olds would.
No, absolutely. And it's, was there sort of a moment there that maybe subconsciously or consciously you thought, do you know what? This is like a really great way to express what's going on for me.
I don't think I actively thought it at the time, mm-hmm. but that did definitely happen at some point of a couple years later. So because I went into lockdown in a very bad situation, I was in an abusive relationship and lockdown did not help. Mm-hmm. So as lockdown progressed and things got worse and worse, I found myself writing more and more prolifically. And I found that it was so cathartic for me. And it really helped me get through that period of time. It definitely saved me. And that's kind of when my parents started noticing, because when restrictions lifted at school, they were doing like little concerts and things, and I got to perform my songs at the concerts, and my parents kind of noticed that I kind of came back into myself a bit for a few days afterwards, because they realized that, you know, after lockdown I was a shell of myself, and they realized that the music was helping me, it was saving me. And so they were like, we can't just wait for another opportunity to come up, we have to bring Amity to the opportunities. So they started taking me out to open mics, and I remember my first open mic. I think I was 15. I'd never really been in a pub before. This one had had its sign stolen outside, so we struggled to find it. But we asked around and eventually came to the conclusion that, yes, this is the place. And it was definitely a nerve-wracking experience, because obviously I'm surrounded by an environment that I've never been in before, people I've never met before, and a lot of noise and a lot of sensory stimuli, and it was overwhelming. I'm autistic, so I do struggle with sensory input a lot of the time, and it was really scary. I remember being terrified, and I remember thinking, have we just made a huge mistake? And my parents, they were thinking that as well, they've told me. But because the other musicians who were playing at that open mic, no one was listening, and it was really disheartening. And so when I got up on the stage, and I say the stage, it was the corner of the room where we had set up the keyboard and the microphone. But when I got up to perform, still no one was listening. And then the guy introduced me, and I introduced the first song. I rambled on for far too long, as I'm probably doing now, because I talk a lot. I tend to over-explain, but I rambled on about what the song meant to me when I wrote it, what it was about. The first one I played was called King of the World. And I had written that one about Boris Johnson.
Amazing.
And because basically when he was little, apparently he always used to say that he wanted to be king of the world. And I thought that that was very thought-provoking, to say the least. No one really listened to the introduction. But then when I started playing and singing, there was kind of this hush that fell over the room. And it was really weird, because I'm sitting there like, why are you listening to me? I'm 15 and you're all drunk and grown-ups and I'm scared of you. But it was almost magical how the room kind of quietened and they started actually paying attention and listening. And after I finished my set, I had these grown adults coming up to me crying, and they were saying things like, you know, why are you here in my local pub on a Thursday evening? You should be, I would pay to see you in a stadium performing. And I was like, whoa.
What a moment.
And this is, you've got to remember, this is my first open mic. I've never done this before. And it's insane. And I go home and I'm like, what just happened? And so my parents start taking me out to more and more open mics, and I start going to the junior open mic, which is, it was in Herne Hill. And I would go there. And I'd perform, and the first time, I think, or the second time I performed, it was within a few weeks of that first performance, I believe. There was someone in the audience who, when I introduced a song that still means the world to me, that I wrote it at 14, and they laughed when I introduced it, because I introduced it by saying that I had been trapped in an abusive relationship. And I wrote it as a cry for freedom, and now I sing it because I am free. And they were a Guardian journalist. They wrote a piece about the song, which ended up in The Guardian. And they had said, you know, I laughed when, well, they misgendered me, but they said, you know, I laughed when he started singing. And then, well, no, when he introduced it.
Mm.
And then when he started singing, I listened, and it changed my mind. And that's kind of the point at which I realized that music had the power to do so much more than just help the person writing it. Sure, it's cathartic for me, but it also has an impact on other people. It can change people's minds, it can change their opinions, their perspectives, it can change their hearts, and it can have a profound effect, actually, on the world around it. And especially with people who resonate with it. Like, I've had people come up to me after shows and tell me, there was one person who survived cancer, and they told me I was looking for a tattoo to get over my cancer scar, and now I know what I'm going to get, and it's going to be a Comet Trail, because one of the songs that I played at that gig was called Comet Trails. And they said they were going to get it tattooed, which I think I was 16 at the time that happened. And honestly, the reaction that I've had to something that I've poured my soul into and left it bare for the world to see, it's honestly, it astounds me every time. It's very surreal. I can't really believe that it's happening to me and something that I've created.
It sounds very surreal and very powerful. And to go from 9 years old writing a song in crayon on the back of a napkin to, it's only a few years after that that you're then on a stage in a pub and having somebody say that to you, and then again do another performance, or I'm sure many more, but another performance where somebody comes up to you who's, you know, really been through something significant in their lives and speak with you in that way and connect to you. I can hear what that, you know, must have meant for you as well in the way in which you moved forward with your career.
Yeah, absolutely. Things like that really spur me on. And I mean, I went from there to, you know, having a residency at the Spice of Life in Soho, which is quite an iconic venue. And from there, I ended up playing the Royal Albert Hall, which was absolutely wild. It was because of the Future Makers program, and I ended up becoming the Royal Albert Hall's official Future Maker artist.
That's absolutely amazing. What was that experience like for you?
It was honestly mind-blowing. I still remember what happened when they named me as the Future Maker artist. I remember there were confetti cannons, okay? Like, of course I'm going to remember that. But these cannons went off, there was confetti everywhere, they had called my name, and I was just stood there in shock because I couldn't quite believe it. And they just, like, had to beckon me forwards, and I just, like, ran down the stage, started shaking people's hands, and they came up to me with a microphone and asked, "So how does this make you feel?" And they put the microphone in my face. I blinked and then I screamed. I screamed into the microphone.
Is there footage of the blink scream?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's on my YouTube, actually.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Do you have a focus or like a central point of your writing? Is there something that drives it and that you can see in most of your lyrics and work?
That's a really good question, because I write my music about a variety of topics. I write it from anything that I've experienced personally to anything that I think needs to be spoken about more, anything I'm passionate about, and anything that, like, current events, politics, things like that, identity, relationships, trauma, mental health. You can find a lot of aspects of all of those things in my songs, and there are some songs that have two very different meanings with the same word. So there's like double meanings to the lyrics, like Bite Me, for example. There's double meanings in it. Some of it is about how there are grey areas that are often overlooked, and dialectics that are often overlooked. And then some of it's about like political things, and some of it is about the aftermath of a destructive relationship. So there are multiple meanings to the words. And what really interests me actually is I got an email a few months ago that was somebody trying to analyze the lyrics of some of my songs, and it was insane, because I love the fact that they did that.
Mm.
I love the fact that people are looking for the meaning of the words, and it really does mean a lot to me that, you know, they want to know the songs like that.
I can hear that sort of analytical part of you sort of being met with another analytical mind who's obviously taken time to listen and reflect on your words, and that can be part of the power of the connection of music. I think it's of bringing people together for many, many different reasons. And I know that you had a record drop this week, so I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that, because we're fastly coming towards the end of the interview. Can you believe it already?
Wow. Well, the song that dropped this week was called White to the Murder, and this one is a commentary on the rise of fascism and a protest song against it. And it talks about how people are dressing up this hatred and bigotry as something holy and something to be revered, something like a virtue. And all it is just hatred. You can dress it up however you want, it's still the same thing. It's one that I find is quite thought-provoking for me, because it helps me like really think about what's going on. It also started from this idea of, you know, one day some of these people, they're gonna wake up with more blood on their hands than they know what to do with. And I mean, it's talking about, you know, especially things that are going on in the US right now, and just all over the world, really, how it's becoming a much more hostile environment. And honestly, I think what we need to remember is that the most important thing in this world is love, and we need to extend that love to one another, especially those of us who are struggling, especially those of us who might not understand at the moment, but are willing to try to understand. We need to extend love, compassion, and understanding to everybody who is willing to do so for us.
Absolutely. And I think when people hear your music, it will probably help them to feel less alone as well. When they hear voices like yours, people telling not just their stories, but their, you know, stories, and recognizing what is going on in the world and that you care, I think can be an incredible, powerful thing and a beautiful thing and a wonderful way to use your voice and the stage. Thinking of stages, have you got some dates coming up this year?
I do. So I've actually got a tour coming up of the UK. It's called the Unredacted Tour. And I'm really hoping that people are going to show up wearing white, like as a little cute little dress code kind of thing. Obviously, I'm not going to be like, no, you're wearing blue, get out. But it would be really cool if people could wear white to the theme of White to the Murder. And there's going to be like a little photo booth and everything. It's going to be awesome. But I'm going to be playing a bunch of different places across through May through to August, I think. And, you know, there's still some unconfirmed dates, but at the moment I've got May the 1st, I'm playing at Cheltenham Jazz Festival. May the 3rd, I'm playing in Folkestone. May the 6th, London. May 10th, Brighton, although that's actually sold out, which is insane. I've got June 27th in Manchester, July 5th in Bristol, which is really exciting.
So there's a lot of dates coming up. People find out more?
Well, you should be able to find out more through my website, my Instagram, where I'll be advertising the dates, because there's even more than what I've mentioned, and even more places like Durham and Glasgow and Kent, and just, it's insane. I honestly can't believe that any of this is going on, but I'm really excited. And I'm especially excited to meet some people who've been following my music, and like, even people who haven't been following it for that long, or who maybe are just hearing about it now. Like, I'd love to meet you guys. And yeah, it's going to be really fun. I'm very excited. I'm so excited that my foot is wagging like a tail. and the autism is back. Hello.
It all sounds so exciting. It really does. And listeners, if you can, get to one of Amity's shows. He's got an incredible voice. He is so powerful. The lyrics are phenomenal. And I think it's what we need to be listening to right now with everything that we are going through across the world. So, Amity, thank you so, so much for a wonderful interview. And we will have to catch up again later in the year.
Yeah. And if you want to find more out about my music or about tour dates and things like that, you can go to my website, which is amity.music. You can also find me on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram as amity_sings. My YouTube is Amity Miller. And I think that's pretty much everything. I'm on Bands in Town and Bandcamp as well. But yeah, thank you so, so much for having me, and I hope to see you again soon.
You are so welcome. Thank you very much, Amity. Bye for now.
See you later.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
There you go. That's Amity there with White to the Murder.
Amazing. I listen to every lyric. Really powerful. Yeah. Go check out his tour, everybody.
Yeah. So thank you for that, Amity. Yeah, I like it. I'm trying to listen to summery stuff as well at the moment. I'm trying to get into the mood.
Are you?
Yeah. Well,
it's party anthems, is it?
But not. It'll come home quick. I mean, Pride's what, 3 months away?
Yes.
I can't believe it's already nearly the end of April.
Yes, I thought that today, actually, looking at the calendar.
It's not even 3 months, is it? No. It's just under 3 months away.
2 months away,
something like that, yeah. Yeah, it's quite
May, June, yeah, because it's beginning in June.
Hey, maybe we'll see Amity at some Pride.
Oh, yeah,
over the next years. I think he'd absolutely rock the stage. The alternative stage at Bristol Pride is always fantastic. That's where I started off last year.
So they got lots of them, haven't they?
Yeah.
Lots of stages.
Yeah,
I remember when Darren was on
the
show.
Yeah.
Talking about it.
Yeah, it's going to be a really, really fun day. So listeners, have a look at the website.
Are you going to dare to have a bet? Is it going to rain or be sunny?
I really hope that we have like just a nice middle ground. I would like the sunshine, but not too hot.
It was really hot last year.
Yeah.
Not the hottest we've ever known, I think.
And then was it the year before we had like torrential rain?
Yeah. And the year before that, it was even hotter. It was unbearable that year.
We have been lucky, though, haven't we?
Yeah,
with weather.
Yeah, they've been blessed with weather. Yeah. They really have,
are you both doing news?
We are.
Yes.
Marvellous. If you don't mind, then, can we find out what's going on in the world?
Oh, sure can.
This is Shout Out News. Welcome along.
HIV charities, including the Terence Higgins Trust, have said that Nigel Farage's recent remarks about refusing free HIV care for illegitimate asylum seekers will ultimately backfire by prolonging the HIV pandemic. Richard Angell, OBE, the chief executive of THT, responded to Mr. Farage, saying, "Nigel told a rally in Scotland that people seeking asylum in the UK should not receive HIV treatment free on the NHS. The remarks echo comments he made in 2015, saying that no migrant should be able to access free HIV care. We cannot let comments like this stand. With treatment, people living with HIV can live a long, healthy life and can't pass it on. Without it, their health is at risk and they could pass on the virus. That is why HIV is one of the conditions for which treatment is free for everyone in the UK." Not only were Mr. Farage's comments deeply stigmatising, said THT, they go against what the scientific evidence tells us, that people are far more likely to seek HIV prevention and treatment if they don't have to worry about the bill. Any changes to the principle of universal free HIV treatment would roll back decades of progress on HIV in the UK. THT concluded, "That's why we're calling on Nigel Farage to put down the dog whistle and join the cross-party effort to end new HIV cases in England by 2030.
Community broadcasters, public service stations like the BBC and commercial radio stations have put their differences aside to back a new campaign on the Capital Radio Network to encourage young men to check themselves for testicular cancer. In a special broadcast aimed at saving lives, radio presenters Jordan North, Chris Stark and Sean Welby were joined by healthcare professionals to inform the nation on the vital importance of self-checking for testicular cancer. The show, which also featured LBC Radio's Nick Ferrari undergoing an examination with Dr. Amos, provided clear practical advice to listeners. In a powerful demonstration, Jordan North performed a self-check live on air, guided step by step by Dr. Amos from the studio. The recommended method is to check in the shower or bath, where the warm water relaxes the scrotum. Men should examine one testicle at a time, rolling it gently between the thumb and fingers to feel for any lumps, changes in size, or differences in texture. The broadcast held particular significance for Chris Stark, who reflected that it marked 1 year since he publicly revealed his own testicular cancer diagnosis during the first Balls to Monday show. "Since we did this last year, I've had thousands of direct messages from blokes that were encouraged to go and check themselves, some of which found something," Stark said. He emphasised the show's goal was to create an excuse to shout about testicular cancer and encourage people across the UK to check themselves and prompt their friends and family to do the same. Charities and the NHS provide extensive resources for anyone seeking more information. Macmillan offers a detailed online guide on how to check, when to visit a doctor and support available. For those diagnosed and in need of mental health support, the Macmillan support line is open daily from 8am to 8pm on 0808 808 0000. Further information on testing and next steps is available via the NHS website, and Cancer Research UK provides guidance on symptoms and when to consult a GP.
Definitely get yourself checked. Now, Radio Free Europe, the dissident radio station which broadcasts democratic news and independent opinion to countries with little free media, has interviewed a bisexual member of the Russian army who has since deserted and fled outside the authoritarian states of Eastern Europe. Artyom Bikov claims his path into the Russian military's 273rd Artillery Brigade began with coercion at a police station. The 24-year-old alleges that in November 2024, officers in a Moscow region precinct threatened to plant drugs on him unless he signed up to a military contract. Bikov, who has previously attended a drug rehabilitation facility, says that his mother called the police on him following a heated argument about his past drug use and his sexual orientation. Faced with the prospect of a criminal case, he felt no choice but to sign. "I was on the hook with the police. My mother could always testify against me, so I chose the lesser of two evils," he told Radio Free Europe. After reluctantly signing the contract, he was dispatched to the brigade's training ground. There, he states, the abuse began in earnest when his commanding officers discovered he was bisexual. Bikov alleges he was subject to repeated beatings. To read the full account and investigation into Russian military brutality, visit allthews.rferl.org and do a search for Russia-Ukraine army hazing. And for the international pacifist and anti-military network War Resisters International, visit allthews.wri-irg.org/en.
And finally, Josh Ackley is a political strategist and the frontman of the queer punk band The Dead Betties. Josh writes for the LGBTQI+ culture and pop blog and magazine Out about the return of Madonna, whose importance for LGBTQI+ people was once such that, tongue-in-cheek, the gay magazine Boys used to refer to her as our glorious leader. Josh writes on Madonna's cultural and political significance and notes, when I was 8 years old, my parents made the premiere of the Like a Prayer video an event in our house, which, in retrospect, feels almost unbelievable, not just because of what that video contained, but because of what it made possible. Madonna dancing in front of burning crosses, invoking the visual language of the Ku Klux Klan, placing herself inside a narrative of racial violence and false accusation, kissing a black saint inside a church that felt both sacred and transgressive at the same time, collapsing religion, sexuality and race into a single frame that refused to resolve neatly into anything polite or easily digestible, all of it landing in our living room, all of it landing on me before I fully understood what I was seeing, but understanding enough to feel that something important was happening. Why not read Josh's full analysis of Madonna's significance? Visit the essay online at www.out.com/gay-music/Madonna-confessions-dance-floor-return.
Oh, she's returned with a lot of hyphens.
Oh, she has indeed.
That's it for this week. Join us again next week for some LGBTQIA news headlines. And in the meantime, check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt. For Shoutout News, I've been Terry Starr.
And I'm Ezra Perry.
Shout out news,
national and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout out
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
A little bit of unhealthy there. That's Amory featuring the voice of Shania Twain.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah. Don't hear
Shania. Blast from past.
Shania.
Yeah. I like that.
I like it as well. Really good. She is
that's
indeed.
That's not actually that newer song. That came out a few years ago, but I haven't played it in ages. So I thought I would shove
that's
it
nice
in.
Enough. I like it.
Very summery, isn't it?
It is very summery, indeed.
I've got Marvin Gaye in later as well.
Ooh.
I don't think we'll get to play it because we've got lots of books.
We have got lots of books.
That's Terry's fault.
Mm.
Is it?
Everything's your fault, Terry. Oh, come well. On, come on.
Me gays control the weather, remember. I'll
pay
make
attention.
It rain on you.
Well, and the books.
And books.
And the books.
Make it rain books and the weather.
I wish somebody could control how many books I purchase. It's
you're like me. We
three bookcases I've got in my bedroom. Three.
Do you not buy them electronically? Is
no.
That? No.
Oh no! I like to be able to smell the pages.
I like it.
I really
like
love it.
Carl's really bad. He buys both.
I have done that, and I have.
But I've got to have one on the bookcase. I'm like, yeah. You're reading it on Kindle. Like, well, yeah, but that's easier to carry around. I'm like, what?
I understand that, to be honest, which is why I've not bought myself a Kindle, because that would happen. I also.
You're looking at it as an app on your phone.
Yeah. I also use a pencil to underline most of the books I read.
Are you much of a bookworm? I do like a book, but I haven't read one for quite a while now, and I do like the physical thing, but because of my arthritis, I tend to prefer reading the digital one.
Yeah.
But I do love going in bookshops.
Yes.
Right.
Which is fortunate, because that's where I spend half of my life when I'm not working. Yeah.
Let's keep on here, Hydra Books.
Yeah, Toppings is a good one in Bath.
I was going to say you like Toppings in Bath.
I love
which is a lovely bookshop. Yeah.
There's nothing like climbing those ladders and getting pushed along the ranks.
I feel like Belle in Beauty and the Beast. It's glorious. And you get free tea and coffee there. And
not up a ladder, I hope.
Oh, no. But any independent bookstore is wonderful. Yeah. Mr. B's in Bath. We've got the £5 bookshop in Bristol up towards the museum.
Oh, yes, that one. Yeah, that's good. The last bookshop.
That's cool. It.
Some
yeah.
of our supporting ones, like Gaze the Word.
Found a good one, independent one, in Cumbria, remember? When we went up to the lakes.
Oh, that was fabulous. It was very a small space that they'd utilised really well. It was literally books floor to ceiling. And they had a lot of LGBTQI+ books as soon as we walked in, a lot of books about people of colour, about black history, books written by women and women who are also people of colour. It was fantastic. And the chap behind the till was lovely, wasn't he? And gave me a free tote bag. And I think he thought that I thought I'd won the lottery. But I had. I'd won the lottery of tote.
Aww.
And I was delighted.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Have you been to Hay on Wye?
Oh, yes.
That's a great place for bookshops.
Yeah.
And there's an LGBT plus one now called Gay on Wye, which is on
Wonderful.
Their main
drag. Oh.
So where did these ones come from?
These were courtesy of Queerlit up in Manchester. Lots and lots of independent bookshops now, so do support your local independent bookshop if you've got one near you, or go online and buy mail order from one of the great ones that's around. But I found these books. These are books that, rather than do a top 10, we thought we'd do some books that are coming out in the summer.
Well, like we did all those years.
Yeah. Like we had to come out. Some books have
I'm
to
still
come out.
Coming out.
And be published. And be published during the spring and summer. There are a couple that are actually just out, and the rest are working up to that day.
Steph keeps going back in the closet, but that's to change.
Didn't you come out twice?
Because I'm that gay.
Yes.
He's so gay, he had to come out twice.
I honestly think I've come out about 200 times. I like it when people assume I've got a husband. That's my favourite one.
So anyway, do we want to do what we normally do? Go around the table.
Yeah,
yes,
go on then.
Why not?
Can I start?
Yeah.
Yes.
I just feel like I should.
Go on then.
25 Days in Athens. Jack Strange, 18th of June. What a great name.
Well, the 18th of June is when the book's due out.
Sorry, written by Jack Strange.
Yep. Yes.
Released on the 18th of June. Will is not ready for this. How can Ollie be moving on from him so quickly? And Greece, the exact location that he and Ollie dreamed about getting married in one day. It's been 3 years since Ollie and Will had spoken, their relationship crumbling after Ollie had proposed and Will had said no. But now Will realizes he might have made the biggest mistake of his life. There is only one option. Will packs his bags and heads to Athens. He has 25 days until Ollie and Alec get married, 25 days to complete his mission. To declare his love for Ollie, win him back, and of course, stop the wedding. The last person Will expects to run into on his first day in Athens is his childhood friend Sam. But Sam isn't the lanky little boy clutching his Pokemon cards anymore. Sam is now an impossibly handsome grown-up, although still secretly clutching his Pokemon cards. Surrounded by the beauty and history of Athens, Will has 25 days to work out what it is he really wants. That sounds wonderful.
It does, doesn't it?
Have you ever been to a wedding, and when they say, if anyone knows of any lawful impediments for this wedding to take place, speak now or forever.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought, has it gone through your head to just say,
yes! Oh, yeah.
just
I've been to three weddings and I've thought it every time. I don't know what I'd say, but I've definitely thought
I've never known it happen, apart from in fiction on TV and like that.
When Mary Milton, who was one of the founders of this programme, got married, which was the first lesbian wedding in Bristol.
Yeah, and they pronounced the man and wife, I remember.
They did. When they said, does anyone know of any lawful impedance for this wedding?
Impediment.
I'm very, very sorry. Mitch, who was, of course, involved in this programme, started to stand up, and her partner, Jane, just said, down! It was a wonderful comic moment.
That is brilliant.
Terry, do you want to do the next one?
Sure. A Pizza Hut, Kentucky Fried Chicken and a Pizza Hut. By Hannah Levine, which will be published on the 9th of June. Herb and Lara are busy slinging coffees in their hometown of Watford, whilst Herb dreams of leaving to write big gay plays for a big gay world. Lara's dedication to being in the here and now keeps her firmly rooted. Plus, she's fallen madly in love with Cynthia, a high femme roboteer here to finish her PhD, teaching her way through robot post-doc hell, stamping on the brains of robo boys as she goes. Soon, Watford will use Cynthia's inventions to reinvent itself into the communised Watford Underberg, but not yet. Meanwhile, Lazarus is back at her mum's. Her attempt at city life didn't exactly go to plan, and as she spends her days working on a Yiddish translation of Kurt Vonnegut's Cat's Cradle and playing video games, with no capacity to think about her future and trying to forget her past, what will happen? Local football coach Butch Lichtenstein, that's what. A Pizza Hut, Kentucky Fried Chicken and a Pizza Hut is a wildly inventive and funny novel that counters the idea of the suburbs as a place queers leave and plays out the radical implications of staying put.
Sounds like a very funny one. That one
sounds fantastic. I was just having a look at it online and I'm tempted to pre-order that one.
Steffi.
Right, A World Worth Saving. It's out on the 2nd of June. It's written by Kyle Luckoff. COVID lockdown is over, yay, but A's the world feels smaller than ever. Coming out as trans didn't exactly go well, and most days he barely leaves his bedroom, let alone the house. But the low point of A's life isn't online school, missing his bar mitzvah, or the fact that his parents monitor his phone like hawks. It's the weekly Save Our Sons and Daughters meetings his parents all but drag him to. As so sad, A and his friends, Sal and Yarrow, sit by while their parents deadname them and wring their hands over the non-existent transgender craze. After all, sitting in suffocating silence has to be better than getting sent away for advanced treatment, never to be heard from again. When Yarrow vanishes after a particularly confrontational meeting, A discovers that SoSad doesn't just feel soul-sucking, it's run by an actual demon who feeds off the pain and misery of kids like him. And it's not just SoSad. The entire world is beset by demons dining on what seems to be an endless buffet of pain and bigotry. But how is one trans kid who hasn't even chosen a name supposed to save his friend, let alone the world? And it's a world that seems hell-bent on rejecting him, even worth saving at all.
Mm. That sounds brilliant, actually.
It does, actually, yeah.
It's the way I read it, I think.
Absolutely,
I sold it.
Really sold it.
But also, if that was true, the way we've got like racism and transphobia and
a whole lot,
and all of that, there's going to be an awful lot of demons in the world that are very, very full.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds almost plausible, doesn't it? The state of the world. When you know, we were talking when we were coming in about we're living in a post-modern Hunger Games themed dystopian nightmare.
Yeah. Look at Trump, how he's very anti-trans. I mean, making them have male markers on their passports again, no healthcare for trans kids and all that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Iran support trans people and will actually pay for the operation. But meantime, they'll also drag gay men and say, if you like men, you must be a woman, and also make gay men
have sexual
assignment surgery, whether they want it or not. What a world.
I'm going to move this up because we've got 6 minutes. We won't get through them all. So Beyond Binary, which is by Jeanette Petrie, coming out on the 13th of July. The photo book Beyond Binary invites readers on a journey into a utopia of gender diversity, transcending the conventional male-female gender norm. It showcases the visibility, self-determination and empowerment of people with trans, non-binary gender identities across several generations. The people featured in Beyond Binary are aged between 15 and 72 years. They reveal their gender as an infinite spectrum where male and female are merely two poles. In addition to their portraits, the individuals provide us with deep personal and unfiltered insights into their various lived experiences and emotional states through handwritten letters. These insights not only cover the gender diversity, but also topics such as neurodiversity, ableism, racism, polyamorous family structures, parenthood, aging, trauma, and discrimination, along with the questions of freedom and autonomy. The text is in English and in German.
It sounds amazing.
But showing the spectrum, which is nice.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. I'm going to skip the next one and hand it to Terry and go to page 6 because I am not going to pronounce some of those words.
Okay.
All
right. Okay.
So this book is called Deviants and Trailblazers, A History of Trans Activism in Britain. Rebecca Jane Morgan, out on the 20th of May. At a time when trans rights are under attack across Britain and beyond, Deviants and Trailblazers arrives as a powerful antidote, uncovering a rich, overlooked history, spanning from the first legal gender changes in 1944 and the devastating Corbett v. Corbett ruling in 1970 to the groundbreaking Gender Recognition Act of 2004 and the ongoing battle for reform today. This is a gripping chronicle of resistance and radical change. Far from being a recent invention or a niche concern, legal recognition of trans identities has been a demand of... recognition of trans identities has been a demand of trans communities for generations. Rebecca Jane Morgan shows how that fight emerged, evolved, and was sustained by grassroots organising, court battles, and an unwavering demand by the trans community to be recognised by the very systems that so often try to erase them. In a moment defined by pseudoscience, moral panic, and political backlash, this authoritative and readable account of the movement to date offers clarity, context, and hope. Wow.
Wow.
Important stuff.
Very, very important.
Right, Terry, give us one for the funny names.
This is a Schutzpah. Well, it's not a funny name.
Is that what you know what I mean? Yeah.
Schutzpah by Yehudis Fletcher is out. It's out now, actually. This is just published this month, so it's fresh on the bookshop shelves. Yehudis was 6 years old when she decided to find out if there was actually a God. One Sabbath evening, she dared to defy a fundamental rule. She didn't wash her hands before breaking bread. At the table, Yehudis braced herself for a terrible biblical punishment, being swallowed by the ground or consumed by fire. But nothing happened. It was at this moment that she discovered a spark that would grow within her to make her invincible. As the daughter of a rabbi raised in an Orthodox Jewish community, Yehudis struggled to conform to the strict expectations placed upon her and her siblings. Outspoken, curious, and desperate to know more about God, she felt fenced in by arbitrary rules and questions left unanswered. As she grew older, these restrictions intensified, and her questions for God hung heavier than ever. Repeatedly let down by those who were supposed to protect her, and pushed onto a path that seemed to take her further away from who she really was, she began to yearn for a life where she could embrace all facets of herself. When Yehudis' sexuality came to blows with the expectations of her family and her community, the pressure to inhabit a binary position reached fever pitch. Confronted with either losing the faith she loved or losing herself, Yehudis made the most daring decision of all. She decided to stay. Wry and exhilarating, Schutzpah is a fearless exploration of what is possible when one person simply refuses to choose between abandoning their roots and abandoning themselves.
Right, we're going to move swiftly on now. Galaxy 2 is The World Falls Down by Jadzia Axelrod and Rye Hickman, out on the 5th of May. The highly anticipated sequel to the YA trans coming out graphic novel Galaxy, The Prettiest Star, brings more romance, more action, and more queer joy as Taylor faces her biggest fear. The vain Taylor Barsley is finally living her authentic self. A purple alien space princess with blue hair and superpowers, with a loving girlfriend Kat and an adorable talking corgi that doubles as her bodyguard, Taylor should feel more at home on Earth than ever. If Superman can't even handle this threat, what chance does Taylor have to save her best friend, the love of her life, and the entire world? Will she cast aside any doubt in time to become the hero she always destined to be?
Can we fit one more in, do you think?
I reckon the last one, Black Flame.
The last one, okay, right, let me have a look. Okay, right, Black Flame, it's by Gretchen Felker-Martin, coming out on the 5th of August. A cursive film, a haunted past, a deadly secret. The Baroness, an infamous exploitation film, long thought lost, destroyed by Nazi fire, is discovered 50 years later when lonely archivist Ellen Kramer, deeply closeted and pathologically repressed, begins restoring the hedonist movie. It unspools dark desires from deep within her. As Ellen is consumed by visions and voices, she becomes convinced the movie is real and is happening to her, and that frame by frame she is unleashing its occult horrors on the world. Oh my gosh. Her life quickly begins to spiral out of control until it all fades to black, and all that remains is a voice asking a question Ellen can't answer but can't get out of her mind. What do you want it more than anything?
What an incredible list of books.
Yeah, yeah. Some really good ones coming out.
A couple more we'll try and get in another week, but we're down to like about a minute and a half remaining. And I don't want to not do them justice,
yes,
because
absolutely.
You know they're really, really good books. So,
and remember to do...
Our fault, we were talking about them too much, you know.
Do support your local independent bookstore, yeah, rather than the big chains, and keep the money in the community.
Absolutely.
Especially the queer community, if you've got an LGBT plus bookstore near you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you are modern, there are now places online, if you do some Googling, where you can buy digital copies of books, but buy it and own it.
Yes.
Because one of the big, and I won't mention names, but some of the big services that provide books don't actually provide you the book anymore. They just provide you the right to read it. yes. They can actually recall it at any point when they choose to.
Okay.
Which is quite different from the old-fashioned book thing. A lot of people are like, well, no, it's mine. I'm on a copy. But if you don't read the terms and conditions, you don't know. So worth checking out. And there are second-hand markets for electronic books and...
And some brilliant second-hand websites as well.
And of course, you get these like pop-up libraries as well. I know Mary's done one in her local place. It was put in a telephone box, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, it was in the Sea Mills here in Bristol.
Yes,
there was, and there's quite a few pop-up libraries in America I've heard of as well that provide LGBT plus literature.
Indeed. So anyway, there's a load of books for you to check out, and that's it for this week. If you have an event or a story, or perhaps you'd love to get involved with the show, we'd love to hear from you. Do check us out online and get in touch.
Plus, all our shows are available as podcasts on all good services, as well as our website, shoutoutradio.lgbt.
I can't for the life of me remember what we're doing next week. Do you know off the top of your head? No. Okay. We'll be back next week with something really, really good and a couple more books.
When I sort it, we'll let you know.
From myself, from S, from Terry and Steph. Say bye-bye.
Bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.